You're listening to Michigan Politics, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Matt Bach.
So welcome to another edition of Michigan Politics, huh? That's the name of my podcast, Michigan Politics, huh? I'm very honored today to be joined by Representative Donna, this is right, Donna?
Donna Lisinski.
I got it right. I'm terrible with names, I used to be a newspaper reporter, but I would never do TV or radio because I can't speak so well. So anyways, so thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here this morning.
Yes. We were at our 2019 convention in Detroit, and the representative is going to be speaking later today on a really important topic to a lot of our members, which is kind of civility and local government. And you've actually spoken to us on this topic before, and I was just wanted to get from you, how did you kind of become an expert in this area, and what are some of the messages you hope to get across?
Oh, well, thank you so much for asking. Yes, sure. It was an honor to speak with your members. I think about 18 months ago or so, you're at the Lansing Center in Lansing. And really, I'm not going to say I'm an expert on this by any means.
Yeah.
What I know is that I'm honored to represent a district in our state out of the 110 House districts. It's about 1 of 10 or 15 right now. That's about equally balanced
in its political views. Which district is that?
So I represent the communities of Dexter, Saline, Manchester, Whitmore Lake, and with that,
so Washtenaw
Dexter,
County.
Chelsea. Yeah.
Yeah, Washtenaw County area.
Exactly. Yep. The more rural area. So Dexter, Chelsea, Manchester, Saline, and Whitmore Lake.
Yeah.
And there, what we know as communities is that we all want the same thing. We want to have a strong, thriving place to raise our families, to retire, to start out in life. And what's really important to me is that we have constructive ways of talking about what that future looks like and our different ideas on how to get there. And so what I've done is just kind of look at conversations in that manner that have been productive and those that haven't, and really try to pull apart sometimes why things work and why they don't.
Right. And you said this, you said a kind of a split district. So you have Republican strongholds and some Democratic strongholds, and you're a Democrat.
I am a Democrat, and my district, actually, every community is pretty well split. When I took office, it was 49% Democratic, 51 Republican. Now they're saying it's 51 Democrat, 49 Republican.
Oh, okay.
It's just right there.
Is your seat one of those ones that's flipped over time?
Or it is. For the last 25 years, it's flipped Democrat, Republican, Republican. And so it is a community that really values the quality of the person who's representing them. And so you have folks all across our community who vote on the same ballot for Democrats and Republicans, looking at the qualities they bring to office.
Right. So how do you approach, when you have people with different, you know, ideologies, how do you approach that and still to have a civil conversation or a civil vote or a civil discussion?
Absolutely. What I really look at, a couple of things, is I know that if someone locked me in a closet for 12 hours and was given the opportunity to just talk, yell, berate, give me facts, do these things, and if that person went into that thinking that they were going to change the core values of who I am and how I was raised, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
So I don't ever expect going into a conversation that I'm going to be able to accomplish that with someone else.
Interesting, yeah.
So my goal is to identify where we have common values, and there just are so many places that we share common values, and to build from that. So I approach...
What would be some examples of some common areas? Like, I'm guessing family and you know, things like that, children,
or... Absolutely, absolutely. So if we look in, you know, the basic question, would we rather have our children drinking water that we know is clean and pure, or would we be okay with drinking water that we don't know is clean and pure? What becomes important in those conversations is not that I speak so that I feel good about the words I've used with you, but that I speak in a way that I know that you're able to hear me.
Okay.
And so an example on that with the water is if I talk about, well, these folks did this and they polluted our water and we should do that and we should do this. Sometimes that turns people off. But when I say, if I was talking to someone and I know that their value, again, is based maybe on a little bit more religious or conservative basis, then I reflect on my Catholic upbringing and I say, look, we have been entrusted with the earth and the water that is given to us.
Yeah.
It is our responsibility to be caretakers, and it's our responsibility to care for our children.
Right.
And where can we find agreement on how we can provide?
Yeah, and that would resonate with anybody, I would think,
pretty much. Exactly. And so, you know, it's talking and using words and being really cognizant of the person that you're talking to, and how can you ensure that they can hear you?
Okay.
Because if we use inflammatory tones or inflammatory words, we simply can't hear each other
right.
to begin a discussion.
Right. Well, interesting. So you know, again, it's about finding that common ground. Today you'll be talking to our members. What are some of the common things or common problems that our communities kind of run into mm-hmm. that causes discourse or causes, you know, friction?
Right. Part of it right now, really, we're looking at a sea change in how we view the communities that we're living in.
Yeah.
We had viewed at different points in time that we wanted to live and work in separate places, that we wanted to go to work and then drive home to our home.
Right.
And so as we see the changes right now, again, with, you know, I have vibrant, thriving downtowns in Dexter, Chelsea,
yeah.
Saline. And what we're seeing is people want to combine that living and working. That puts stress on a community.
Right.
From the perspective that it can change property values as people try to crowd in a little
yeah.
bit to the more downtown spaces. As folks want walkable spaces, it puts stress on folks who still want to drive through town.
Okay.
As we see these conflicts come up, it's important that we look at the tensions between younger and older residents, increasing folks who didn't grow up in that town coming to that town
right.
and bringing some vibrant ideas
yeah.
with them. And it's in those settings that we need to ensure that we are respectful of each other
right.
and that we are having those conversations in a way that allows us to express our viewpoints but doesn't allow us to pit neighbor against neighbor.
Right. Why do you think it is that often, I was until recently a member of my township, my local township
mm-hmm.
board, and we had a really controversial issue, and the audience just started, you know, yelling, and it was like, you know, and then a school teacher stood up, and she said, I wouldn't expect this kind of behavior from my students, and here we are. And it really made everybody take a step back. But where does that anger and frustration come from, you think? Why do people seem to resort to that as opposed to the being amicable and...
We all have to acknowledge the change in the last 10 years in
yeah.
our media environment.
Right.
And I've been very clear with people that I am a cord cutter. I don't watch talking opinion heads
oh, really?
On
okay.
television, period. I haven't found it to be informative to my actual policy positions and to my relationships in the community. So I'm someone who reads 5 papers every morning, who gets up early
oh,
every morning to make sure I can do that.
As a former newspaper reporter, I appreciate that.
Well, that's wonderful. I will say that I do it all online,
oh, okay.
That I don't have a paper
right,
delivered
right.
to my home. But that idea that allows me to, one, make sure I'm reading journalistic reporting.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm looking at what I'm reading, I'm making sure that it is actual, you know, been constructed with journalistic ethics, that it's been fact-checked. What I never want to bring to a conversation is inflammatory statements or judgments or opinions that haven't been vetted, have less than truth to them. But we know that a lot of people are living in two different media worlds.
Right.
And they see that form of expression as somehow courageous. When you yell and scream that you're saying what needs to be said,
yeah.
I have found it only to be detrimental
yeah.
to true community growth and conversation.
Okay. So what, we kind of touched on this a little bit, what advice do you have to local communities to try to maybe work out their differences?
One, as you said, your school teacher said, and I think it's a song lyric I'm about to quote, you can't always get what you want.
Right.
If government was run in a way that everybody got exactly what they wanted and how they wanted it,
yeah.
nothing would ever be accomplished. And so it's recognizing as we've done before that, and we need to do again, that we're all going to get some of what we want, and that every solution should have a win for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We seem to feel that in order for a deal to be successful, everyone has to feel a bit of pain. Everybody should lose something, and that's the definition of a successful deal. I absolutely reject that.
Okay.
A successful deal is when everyone can see a win for themselves in
yeah.
it, not when everyone feels pain in the resolution. That usually means you've arrived at the wrong spot.
I see.
There's absolutely a way for everyone to feel and come out of a community conversation feeling they got something of what they were looking for.
Okay.
And I think we need to turn that on its head, that kind of what's become a cliche understanding of a good deal is everybody lost something.
Yeah, so you flip it and think, well, everybody gain something, or how do you flip
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. So let's look at, you know, when I'm looking at the towns that I represent, trails and greenways are a big part of it right now.
Right.
Connecting communities with trails and greenways provides smaller downtowns with huge economic opportunities as
I've done
people come
in. Dexter to Ann Arbor Half Marathon, and that's a great example of that.
Absolutely. And now we're looking to connect Dexter to Chelsea. We're looking at a 40-mile loop for bikers through outside of my district, but up through Stockbridge and other places. And so connecting community with trails. What we know is there's a lot of reluctance sometimes for property owners to have a trail come through their front yard.
Oh,
there's
right.
traffic issues. There becomes parking issues when the trails get popular.
Right.
People are bringing their bikes.
Right. Yeah.
But they often drive, park, and then ride. So as we're looking for that, what is the win we can get out of every situation? And in, for folks who have property that are going to need use of their easement, you know, we can look at different opportunities, economic incentives there. What we've seen is providing the research that if you're near a trail or live on a trail, your property value actually goes up.
Right, yeah.
What are some of the things? So it's presenting those wins to people,
mm-hmm.
making them feel comfortable, and making sure they are compensated for what they perceive as a risk.
Yeah.
The community gets a win, the property owner gets a long-term win, and we have to find those places and ways to do that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. We actually had a very similar issue in my township where we're building a new park and it's going to have a trail, and all the residents in the subdivision nearby came and complained of the sound and they're going to be on a property. And then there was a next door township that did the same thing, and a person just happened to be in the audience from there. She goes, yeah, we love the trail. We were all against it just like you were, and now mm-hmm. it's like the greatest thing in the world.
Absolutely. So feeding more of that information in and sharing good ideas between townships and really taking care with people. Change is scary. That's never going to change about human nature, right?
Yeah, exactly.
A body in motion tends to stay in motion. One in place tends to stay in place. And so to get a place to change, to put a change in motion, there's going to be discomfort. And we have to be patient with each other and generous with each other.
Now, I know here from my members, I speak a lot on social media, and I hear this, you know, on councils, city councils or village councils. A lot of times there's like one or two council members that's kind of like the thorn in everyone's side.
Mm-hmm.
And that one person that's mm-hmm. there for whatever reason, and the other council members just get so frustrated with this person that we've talked to them, we've tried to get them to, mm-hmm. to you know, compromise, and they're just not going to do it. How do you deal with, you know, situations like that?
Look, I work in a legislature with 110 other
and
members.
And you're in the minority.
And I am in the minority right now. You are never going to get 100%, and I think that's what we have to become comfortable with.
Okay.
Again, we have to look for a win with those folks. We have to understand that people come to, a lot of times people come to running for office because they have been angered about something.
Right,
because they're upset about how something went, and that's how our democracy is supposed to work.
Right.
Is that if you have an idea or a set of values that you think is different or is supportive of the way direction things are going, our public gets to choose who's there.
Yeah.
And so being very transparent about your operations, being very transparent about every person on the council's view or the township trustee board,
mm-hmm.
and letting the voters make that choice. But yes, I'm not going to say that no one is a thorn in my side. That's for sure. But what we have to do, again, is nearer to the issue and never, ever make it personal.
Okay. Now, you've been in the state legislature for how long now?
I'm in my third year during my second term.
Okay. So how did you get involved in politics? We're seeing a rise, obviously, more women in politics, mm-hmm. local and state, national, federal
Absolutely.
Level. How did you get involved? What's your background? And, you know, what's some advice maybe to someone listening to this that's thinking, hey, I could maybe do that too?
Right. So I am a small business owner.
Okay.
I own a company that focuses on student summer learning for students, making sure they retain what they lost.
Sure.
And so I looked at that and said, okay, if I'm doing this, how come the state hasn't figured this out?
Right.
And so I went to an advocacy workshop at my local intermediate school district, started advocating at the state government level, moved on in my own community and thought, well, maybe the school board and it would be a good place to talk about this work. Was elected to my school board, and then...
Which school district was that?
So that was Ann Arbor Public Schools.
Oh, okay.
So my kids are on the far western edge of that.
Okay.
So I was an Ann Arbor Public School Board member, and then looked at the funding crisis there. And again, as I said, people often come to office because something has compelled them.
Right, right.
For me, it was school funding and the lack of school
right.
funding, I should say, and ran for the state house when the seat in my district opened up.
Yeah.
So what I know is I was just that community member who is interested.
Yeah.
I don't have a long history of elected office. I have a long history of being an engaged community member across all different causes and places. And that built those relationships and propelled me to keep taking the next step.
And what's the difference between serving on the school board and then serving the state legislature? It seems like a pretty big jump.
It is really interesting. Serving on school board, when I was in the grocery store, people would ram their carts into mine.
Oh, really?
There is nothing to make me stop and listen.
Okay, they weren't mean.
They weren't mean. They were just like, Donna, like, we have to.
They assaulted you.
No, exactly. No, just from the perspective that there's nothing more personal than your child in school.
Right,
and so one of the big differences moving to the state house is that a typical day for me can look at such a wide variety of issues, from township ordinances, from looking at how local control issues versus state control issues.
Yeah.
You can look at, I'm the vice chair of energy, looking at renewable versus non-renewable power sources. I'm heading over to auto no-fault insurance. I'm on the tax policy committee. So I would say with the school board,
a real mix of topics.
I'm the vice chair of energy. I'm on the Democratic side. I am on the tax policy, and I'm on insurance committee.
Oh, wow.
So that breadth of issues is the real difference. When you're on school board, you have one primary focus, and it's very personal to your community members.
Right.
Now I have community members who have a broad base of issues and feel it less personally than they feel often, than they feel the future of their own child in a single classroom.
Right.
So that's been a real surprise to me.
That's awesome. So what kind of advice would you give to somebody that's kind of considering it, but they don't really know how to get started?
Getting started is the hardest part. Okay. Putting yourself out there and say, I'm going to ask people to vote for me.
Yeah.
I can put myself out there for you. I can put myself out there and say, gosh, I think Matt is the greatest guy and I think you should support him.
Yeah.
Putting yourself out there is really difficult.
Right.
But what is critical is that you have a point of view. You are willing to do the work. You're willing to communicate with your community members so that you are truly representing them and that you are going to put in the time and effort to let people know who you are so they can make an informed choice.
Great.
We need people from everywhere, from all perspectives.
Right.
Because if we don't, the danger is when we have a single perspective, we are not going to be truly reflecting our communities.
Awesome. Okay. So you mentioned that the communities you represent, some of them, Chelsea, Dexter, Saline, are all Saline or Saline?
Saline.
I always say it wrong.
Exactly.
So there's some really charming, wonderful little downtowns. And the League, as you know, the Michigan Municipal League, advocates the concept of placemaking. And, and we believe in having a vibrant, strong downtown or community really leads to the whole economic prosperity of the region.
Yes.
And we're seeing that we're in downtown Detroit. We're starting to see a lot of that with some of the things. What's your stance on that? And you kind of probably seen it from a firsthand perspective.
Mm-hmm. What is so interesting to me and one of the things that I really, really enjoy is that as Chelsea, Dexter, Saline, Manchester has very focused plans, Whitmore Lake is focusing, is that people start to identify themselves with that town even when they don't live in
the
town.
Right, they say, I live in Dexter, and they're in the township.
Right, exactly. There are so many people who think they live in the city of Dexter and actually live in a township.
Right.
It becomes a place of pride. It becomes a place where people socialize. We've always had our church communities, and now we have those have grown, and now we have our downtown communities, and we have unique festivals. We have unique times. We have our Smoke and Ale Festival in Chelsea. We have our Painting in Plein Air,
Isn't there a Celtic festival down there somewhere?
Celtic festival is in Saline, which is wonderful. Yep, we've got the Celtic festival in Saline. And so we have these events that draw people in from a broader part and give people so much pride in our community.
Right.
Combine those with the wonderful schools that we have in each of our communities and the the infamous high school rivalries and the football games.
Right.
And you really get a sense of place and of pride.
Right. So it's just the last kind of a question here. So looking at the political situation, we're in the midst of the budget discussions right now, but I'm not sure when this is going to air, so I don't want to get too much into that.
Correct.
But what do you kind of see things happening, beyond the budget situation in the next year? We're going into a presidential election. We're in it, but next year will be the presidential election. And what do you kind of see things happening in the next years too?
So I'll tell you, what the last year has taught me is to just give up my crystal ball. there right. there is almost no value in making predictions at this point.
Yeah.
What I will predict, at least at the state government level, is that we are learning how to work together from the standpoint that over the last 8 years, you know, when you're trying to tackle a difficult problem and you're trying to do a three-man weave between the House, the legislature, and the governor's office, that's a whole lot easier to do when you are on the same team.
Yeah.
But now we are looking at, again, a diversity, and this, you know, the voters of the state of Michigan overwhelmingly elected our governor. And so as we look now at weaving together differing perspectives on how to get to what I believe is the same place.
Right.
I believe as Democrats and Republicans, we all want a thriving Michigan. We want every Michigander to have one good job. We don't want to be below Mississippi in our education
sure.
achievement.
Absolutely.
What we need to do is bring together now the different perspectives on how to get to that place that we want Michigan to be in.
Okay.
And to do that, we have to find wins for everyone. And the idea that we would just present one perspective, just present one way, and stand firmly on that ground, you know, if this airs after the budget is done. We saw a budget that was proposed to a governor that didn't follow the typical path of a budget over the last 50 years, where
right.
the governor and the legislature have sat together and set targets. Instead,
yeah.
we're seeing a very one-sided proposal go to the governor.
Right.
The governor can't create a bill. She
right.
can propose things, but she can't create a bill. And so that's going to be difficult. I think a lot of learnings will come out of this, and I hope to see improvements and
for
openness
next year's budget
as we learn how to work together.
Right. One last thing I just popped in my head. I've been seeing commercials lately about the lottery and about how much money of the lottery's gone to schools.
Yes.
I know as a reporter, I covered education, and the question is like, why are we asking for more money? I thought the lottery is supposed to be funding schools.
Absolutely.
Did you ever hear that? And
what do you think about
these commercials?
And absolutely, 100% of the lottery money
yeah.
goes to K-12
but
schools.
But it's just not enough.
Well, what it is K-12 schools is about $12.8 billion, and the lottery generates about $700 million.
Wow.
So when you're looking at it, it's not a percentage. And if you look then at what's happened over the last 8 years, the school aid fund, which was, according to the folks who wrote our Constitution in 1968, it was supposed to go 100% to K-12 schools, and now this is the shell game that we have going on.
Yeah.
Lottery money goes in, but then a big scoop out of the K-12 budget is taken out
yeah.
For other purposes that aren't K-12 education. And
right.
this is the shell game we really have to end at
yeah.
our state.
Do you think the commercials are effective, or do you think have you seen them at all?
I have heard them on the radio.
Okay.
Yes, I think it's important because we don't ever want people to think that money isn't going where it should go.
Right.
But we have to be transparent about the fact that in that $12.8 or so billion dollars, that money is being diverted to community colleges, to other places that
yeah.
never was in the K-12 fund was never intended for.
Right.
And that practice needs to stop.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, that practice only continues because you need to take other expenses out of K-12 in order to support things like road funding.
Oh.
So a dedicated stream of revenue for road funding would undo a lot of the robbing Peter to pay Paul, a lot of the shell game
yeah.
Items that we do when we actually honestly fund needed items in the state with direct revenue streams.
Okay. The League Board earlier this year support Governor Whitmer's call for $2.5 billion in additional road funding.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of one of those things that hopefully next year that'll be, or sooner than maybe next year, will be ironed out.
Well, you know, and the point that I'm working to make with folks is that $2.5 billion number is a Governor Snyder number.
Yeah, oh,
He you know, put together the team. That's the size of the problem.
Yeah.
Governor Whitmer agreed that was the size of the problem, but then put down the challenge and said, let's solve the problem.
Right.
And some folks are willing to look at radical and varied ways to solve that problem, and some folks are saying, let's just keep doing what we've done. My vote record shows that I voted against the K-12 budget, where we just continued a status quo increase.
Right.
That didn't keep up with inflation. We can't keep doing that to schools. So as we look forward, I understand, and I'm having the community conversations to make sure that we can make the radical decision to become a successful Michigan tomorrow instead of continuing the status quo of today with schools that aren't able to perform, keep up with inflation, with roads that are dangerous to our residents, and with water that is causing uncertainty. That's completely unacceptable for our state.
Okay. Well, Representative Lisinski, I appreciate you speaking with us today and talking to our members, and keep up the good work in Lansing, and good luck to you.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be invited and looking forward to the rest of my day here and interacting with community representatives.
Great. Thank you very much.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.